This is Jeremy Boyer, the organist for the 2019 Stanley Cup champion St. Louis Blues. You're listening to Optional Skate Blues with Eric and Mike. Let's go, Blues!
Welcome to another episode of Optional Skate Blues, our podcast where we talk hockey and focus on the St. Louis Blues. I'm Mike, here with Eric.
Shout out to all my people, keeping it real in Westlake Stevens.
And it's Tuesday, March 2nd, and we will talk about the organizational dysfunction in Buffalo. We'll look to shed some more light on the Blues' ever-expanding injury list, and we'll review the last week of games for the Blues. How was your week this week, Eric?
Yeah, man, it's going pretty well. My girls are a little bit sick though, and no COVID stuff, but just some head cold stuff. And I've been watching way too much My Little Pony. And I used to think that way too much My Little Pony was any My Little Pony, but damn, I'm watching so much My Little Pony right now, and it is absolute trash.
Wow. Got a brony on our hands, huh?
Right? I remember whenever I started talking to D'Souza about that, and I started to make fun of him just out of nowhere, calling him a brony. And now I know all about, I think it might be Shutterfly. And what is it? Rainbow Dash. I got that. There's a little dinosaur that he eats gems. So I'm not quite Spike is his name. There we go. See, I'm on the uptick, but man, it's not a good show at all. Like, it has like 6 seconds of positive message for kids. And I usually like more shows like Pete the Cat, because that is legit and gives a lot of really good messages on being kind, taking care of your business. But man, both the girls just want, that's all they want. They're craving it. They need to chase the dragon.
Well, I don't know if you take a look at our fantasy rankings, but we're number one and number two right now. So head to head against each other this week. So
yeah.
You're playing the Bono role, of course, number two.
You just need to let me have this one thing, just this one thing. And I don't know, man, it's not bad. Did you notice my new team name by any chance?
I think I saw it.
You saw that?
Yeah.
I'm just going to pull it up here real quick just so I can look at it again. The Westlake Stevens Squatch. And man, it is an intimidating Sasquatch for my logo that I've chose, if I do say so.
some squatchy behavior there, but
the BFRO.
But this week I put together some furniture, got a new bookshelf, and sometime in there my cable and internet situation got all screwed up, and had to fix wiring in my house and got somebody out to get all hooked up. So back with the internet, that was good stuff. So yeah. Getting ready to ramp up with work, get opening up a new restaurant here very, very soon. So starting to get crazy.
The restaurant opening has got to be awesome, man. That's got to be intimidating, but really cool at the same time. And I know that you've done some stuff like that before. So it's an old hat to you, but to the uninitiated, it sounds terrifying.
It's still always terrifying, but it gets better each time. So, you know.
Yeah. What was the furniture? You said a bookshelf. Are we talking IKEA stuff or?
Not IKEA, but it may as well have been. I think Wayfair. So lots of hex bolts, but yeah, pretty simple ladder bookshelf, and busted the other one. Needed to get a new one. So.
Is there a good story on breaking bookshelves? Like, did you juggernaut it or?
No, just mostly stupidity. It's supposed to be anchored to the wall and I forgot and moved it away from the wall and then it busted the feet. So didn't work out well.
There you go. There's your problem.
Metaphorical juggernauting.
Yeah, the IKEA adjacent furniture from Wayfair. We got some good stuff from Wayfair, though, man. Mm-hmm. When we redid both our bathrooms, our COVID remodel, we had some pretty good stuff upstairs. So pretty happy with them.
Yeah. But I think, you know, last week, right as we started our podcast, kind of the Artemi Panarin news came out. And we kind of just heard about it when it was happening. But seems like a pretty concerning situation for him and his family. Allegations came out that he struck an 18-year-old woman in Latvia over 10 years ago. It seemed like the team and the league was pretty quick to come out decisively against it, saying that it wasn't true, that it's kind of a scare tactic. But you know anything more on this, Eric?
No, man. What I read is basically what you're talking about, and it just hit. It's kind of terrifying because the strong arm stuff that it seems like the Russian government is doing to the bread man, where I think the bread man needs to worry about having this this Novichok nerve agent in his undies, like Russian government anti-corruption activist Alexei Navalny. But crazy stuff. And they said that he took time away from the team so he could check on the well-being of his family. Like, if you speak out against Putin and we're going to drum up some accusations that could ruin your career and we're going to mess with your house too.
Yep. And, I looked a little even further into the situation and, I think that we kind of think that anybody that speaks out against Putin is probably good. But if you're looking at where they are on the political spectrum, this Navalny guy is even farther to the right, associates with nationalist, terrible parties. So, it's even murkier when you think of it in that maybe it's not the best guy to be supporting in the first place, even though Putin isn't an ideal or a good person, you'd think also. So, it's kind of just a crazy situation in general that you'd fear for your family versus speaking out for what you believe in. But it's also mired in that they're both pretty terrible human beings that you would never want to be ahead of your country anyway. So,
yeah, you hear anti-corruption activist and you think, well, that seems like a pretty good guy. I might have him over at my next party at the house.
Exactly.
And then you come to find out he's a total a-hole too. It's six in one hand, a half dozen in the other with authoritarian type people. So
to choose which shit sandwich you get.
Another South Park reference. Do you want a giant douche or a turd sandwich? No, you're actually a turd sandwich. You're a turd sandwich. One of my favorite back and forths in all of TV. You're a turd. Yeah, that's another one. No, you're quite obviously a towel. You're a towel.
Well, it came out today that Sidney Crosby hit the COVID protocol list. So some ripples coming out today, that the NHL looked like they were starting to really move past this. And they've had a couple of instances pop up here. And, one of their biggest players now is on the list. So certainly re-concerning for them.
Yeah, and whenever you look at Pittsburgh too, man, they're on that point percentage playoff bubble right now, right? Mm-hmm. And out east, it's going to be difficult for the Penguins right now. But we talked earlier, whenever one of our earlier podcasts about how Merkin comes out and he just really performs whenever Crosby seems to be down and out. So this is his chance to come in and make it his team and see if he can put them on their back and get them back actually into the playoffs. Because right now they're on the outside looking in, both with two games in hand, I think, even as we record this on March 2nd. So.
Yep. So this is all an evil plan to get Malkin going.
It would be very elaborate. I guess that nothing is out of the realm of possibility in a day and age.
Talk about Putin and his evil tricks. So.
Yeah. In a day of QAnon and Putin evil tricks. I know your tricks. Did you just give Crosby COVID? Did you just grab my ass and give Crosby COVID?
I'm all the way across the room. How could I?
I'm all the way in Russia. How could I possibly? Yeah, man. But we'll see how they come out the other side on this. But it's time's a factor. Absolutely.
Yep. Now, also happening today, the Oilers claim goalie Alex Stalock off of waivers from Minnesota. So kind of concerning goaltending there. They're hopefully taking some steps to have Mike Smith not play as much, I guess, or.
Yeah, it looked like they were shoring up their goaltending, man. Whenever I looked at Stalock's numbers last year in Minnesota, remember, Minnesota was not a good team last year. Mm-hmm. Stalock was 20-11 with a 2.67 goals against, a 9.10 save percentage, and he had four shutouts. If he made it down to the Blues, and if we could fit him in under our cap, I would have had no problem with the note taking a flyer on him and just leaving Husso for the taxi squad for a little bit longer. Now, Husso started to play a lot better in the last couple games, so that's not a knock on him. That's just saying if somebody's going to give you a chance at something for nothing, you might as well give it a shot. And I think that's what Edmonton's looking at. I think that he has a real legitimate chance of being Edmonton's starting goalie moving forward.
Yeah, they just lost 3-4 to the Leafs last night. And, you know, are sitting right on the edge of the playoff bubble in the North. And they've had notoriously bad goaltending for years now. So, you know, anything that they can try to take steps at it is certainly better than them re-rolling the same options that haven't panned out for them, I think.
Yeah, just trying to roll out subpar. I mean, Stalock's not necessarily, you know, he's not going to win the Vezina by any means. But if they can get somebody out there, if they can catch lightning in a bottle with a hot goalie, and if he can come in and be that for them, then why not take a chance and see if he can do that? But yeah, the goaltending, you can't keep rolling out these guys who are scoring, you know, five goals a game, not the last two games against Toronto, but average and that kind of thing. So if he's able to put up comparable numbers and keep them below three most nights, I think Edmonton has a chance to go out there and win every single night. Now that's the new North division. That's that, that arms race and, you know, the race to who can score five or six goals first, but
yeah,
who knows?
Well, you know, and I think goaltending so random that sometimes just putting that other guy in to give him the opportunity can be just the thing that they need. So
look at the Blues against Philadelphia in 2019.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, not only that, you know, you look at Chicago, they had no idea who was going to be their goaltender coming into this year. And the guy gets a chance and makes the most out of the opportunity. So
yep.
Some part of it is just having the right guy in the right spot at the right time. And I think that it's a good option with a competent player that certainly is at least on par with what you're rolling out there at the moment.
Yep. Great points.
Now, going back to some Blue Jackets information, the Torts got the dreaded vote of confidence from the GM today. You know, not saying that we're committed to him through the end of the year, but he's our guy right now. And he had my vote of confidence. It seems like kind of the writing on the wall or the, you know, Grim Reaper coming to roost when that happens. So you think there's anything to it?
So I, with the volume that we've had to talk about the Blue Jackets this year, I think it's going to be optional skate Blue Jackets instead of Blues here before too damn long, right? But no, I agree that as soon as I read
the cannon,
you can fire the cannon. if I can be Stinger, if I can dress as Stinger, you can fire all the cannons. You can be all the Boom Jackets, whatever you want to do. Stinger.
Humorous Moon Stinger.
Some context to that joke. We are on a platform Squadcast recording right now for the first time, which, by the way, man, again, I know we said this at the outset, but I'm already a huge fan of, instead of just over the phone talking, actually seeing our faces and interacting with each other.
Yeah, much better.
Much better. And but Mike did not put in his screen name, so it shows one for him, and he is Humorous Moonwalker right now, which I have absolutely written down for future references. Whatever, it's completely and totally out of left field.
It would probably be humorous if I moonwalked, so.
All these are facts. All of these are facts. But to your point and your question earlier about Tortorella getting that vote of confidence, yeah, man, anytime your boss has to come out publicly and say, I'm not worried about his job performance, they're absolutely worried about your job performance. Like, there's no need to do that on a random, really good Wednesday whenever your company is having a great quarter or whatever, right? Like, if you're fucking shit up, that's whenever somebody needs to come out and say, nah, man, that's my guy.
Yeah.
That's my guy. And it's the writing's on the wall. I agree. I for what it's worth, though, too, man, I appreciate Tortorella's response yesterday, even in the media, not even today on the 2nd, but on March 1st, he came out and he said, you know, it was along the lines of, I'm going to keep coaching this team the best way that I know how. As long as that lines up with management, then they'll keep me here around. And if it doesn't, then they'll show me the door. So you can say a lot of things about Tortorella, but you definitely cannot call him a poser. What you see is what you get with him. And I respect that.
Yep. He puts it out there. It seems like he's pretty straight shooter. If you may not always like the message or what he's feeding you, I guess, but so also bad times is Buffalo. They're really struggling right now, all the way from the top to the bottom. It's just nobody's having fun there right now. What the heck's going on?
It's a hot mess there, man. I looked back at their franchise to get a recent idea on the last time that they were truly successful, and I had to go all the way back to Their last coach who knew what the hell was going on was Lindy Ruff, and he was the team's coach from 1997 to 2013. And that was the last time. They've had five coaches since then.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had their winningest coach since Lindy Ruff was Dan Bylsma with just a 48% winning percentage. And it was over like a season and a half or something like that. It wasn't even a really long sample size. So, yeah, they got trouble there for sure.
Yep. So the coach, Rolf Krueger, you know, he's having issues with Jeff Skinner. He's had him healthy scratch with his lofty salary for quite a few games. They're kind of injured to the point where he has to have him in the lineup right now, and he got 2 minutes and 30 seconds ice time in the last game. At the last second before the game, Eichel was injured, they said, in warmups, and Krueger said he didn't know anything about the injury that had happened in warmups, but I guess Eichel's been injured for a while now or had some nagging issue. So they're just really messed up. And one of the writers at the Buffalo News, Mike Harrington, says, you know, the franchise is an utter disgrace. Ownership, management, coaches, players, all of them. That's all he's got to say. So they are some passionate fans up in Buffalo. You know, they always lead in like viewership numbers whenever they do the national stuff for hockey, and You saw how crazy they were with the Buffalo Bills jumping through tables this year. And they certainly are jumping through tables for a different reason than the Buffalo Sabres right now. So, you know, the big question that it kind of all leads to is, do you think it's going to lead to Eichel getting traded? He's such an amazingly talented center. After this year, he gets a full no move clause. So they have an opportunity to potentially trade him to get some value before that kicks in his contract. And, you know, they think that he could demand out after that, or I think he just has one season after that anyway, or how that works. So they're really scrambling to figure out what they're going to do.
He's got some time still. Eichel, his contract is still going for, I think it's, he's signed for 10 million per for a number, or for six more years. Mm-hmm. So
after this year or the next year, that is like limited, no trade becomes a full.
Okay. That I don't know. I apologize. Yeah. So I'm not sure about that.
Him in a bind where they could have some leverage to trade him to somebody. And then you can just say, I'll take the money here and suck with you guys. Or
I think that he's the kind of guy who's going to want to win, though. Right. And to go backwards just for a minute, man, I don't know what their plan is with Skinner. You know, you're paying the guy $9 million a year for another, you know, six or so years. Him in the press box is not going to do anybody any good. If Skinner wants out, or if you want him out, you get, like, management just has to tell him, go ahead and play, go on the ice, play the best hockey that you can play, and we'll trade you as best that we can. Right now, I don't even know if the Kraken would even want to take a crack at him. I don't know if they'd even take him, you know, to help them get to the salary floor. I don't think that'd be an interest for them with how much time, with how much time is left on his contract. If it was 1 or 2 years, they may take a chance. But no, man, whenever they need to figure him out. So, and then on, to go along with what you're saying about Eichel getting traded, absolutely. I think that they should look at hitting the reset button yet again. It sucks, but whenever you're looking at, whenever the Sabres were good, again, you have to look back to whenever they were playing meaningful postseason games, and that's back in 05, 06. In 05 and 06, to give you an idea on how long it's been, their best players were Thomas Vanek, Daniel Briere, and they had Brian Campbell and Tempo Numanen anchoring their back line, and they had Ryan Miller in the prime of his career. That's how long it's been since they've been playing meaningful hockey. They had this, they had the Buffalo Slug snail. Yeah, the Buffalo Slug as their logo at that time. So they've been like two logos ago. They've been like two rebrandings ago since they've been anywhere near a playoff or a contending team. They've just been a joke otherwise. My question is, do the Buffalo Sabres want their current GM to be the guy who actually constructs this rebuild? Is a guy, Kevin Adams, who's had the job for like 8 months, is he the guy who you really want to come in here and rebuild your franchise with such a marquee talent as Jack Eichel? You're going to want to build your franchise around a guy like Jack Eichel, but you're going to have to trade Jack Eichel to build your franchise around a guy named Jack, like Jack Eichel. Mm-hmm. That's how messed up this franchise is right now.
Yep. And well, do you think back, do you want the last GM to do it? Who was the same one that traded Ryan O'Reilly for, you know, that terrible deal? So I'm sure they don't trust ownership at all. You want to keep the talented player and get some people around him, but they just seem like they're so far off. And what's the defenseman that they drafted?
Rasmus.
But, you know, he hasn't panned out so far the way that they would hope or what you'd want to get from a number one pick. So they're kind of, they've had a couple shots at it during this rebuild, and they've just screwed it up on every level. And they're really looking bleak for their future right now.
Yeah, I look back at their draft history too, again, since Lindy Ruff left, and I didn't even just look at first round picks. I looked at every single draft that they had and every pick that they took, and I saw some kind of marginal or peripheral NHL caliber players that they drafted, their own homegrown talent. And then they overpay for guys like Jeff Skinner, and then they put them in the press box and stuff. So it's just not a recipe for success. I know that they made the move to get Hall and bring him in, and they made a couple other smaller moves this summer to try and get the franchise headed in the right direction. But it just, it's just abysmal. I would be really, really pissed off if I were a Buffalo Sabres fan, man. And I could take a pretty deep dive on how the NHL had looked at Black History Month.
I mean, what do you think they did bad? I think they did more than they ever did.
I agree that they did more than they ever did. And I also think that they did the kind of like the superheroes, right? Like the, you know, how whenever you study Black History Month, they only do like the black kind of superheroes. There's this person. It's not just an overall celebration of what it is. And I think that honestly, the way that the NHL has responded to all the racial injustice protests and that, I think has been very dip your toe in it. And this would have been an opportunity for them to kind of say, you know, this is important to us. They've got an awesome website that's about Black. The NHL has an awesome website that's about Black History Month that they promoted not at all. Like you had to go and search for it and look for it. And it's really, really strong. And it talks about a lot of Black athletes. It talks about current, past. It talks about female Black hockey athletes. And it goes really in depth. But I don't know if it was just my broadcast. I didn't see shit about it.
Yeah, no, I guess I start to get the NHL Network now, and they were doing stuff on there daily, and it trickled down to the PWHA was doing the skates and with O'Ree on them. And
yeah, I saw that. Yeah,
so. Yeah, I think that I guess I find it hard sometimes to, it's kind of like the Tahoe thing, right? Like,
yeah,
they had an opportunity to do something great and they didn't do as well as they should have, but it was still something different. It was something.
Yeah, but they're at a snail's pace. They're crawling into all this stuff, and they're saying that, okay, we can't just be hockey. We have to also be, it's not enough. That whole idea that it's not enough to just be against, it's not enough to just be not racist. Like, you have to be against racism. You have to stand up to racism also. So I think that that's kind of where they're arriving.
And I think that everybody's inherently racist, and the only way to get better is admit that you suck and you need to try to get better every day. So,
completely,
you know, like some part of it is just, they have to start somewhere and they started here, but I think it's hard to judge. Cause I didn't think would go as far as to cancel those games in the bubble. You know, yeah. I don't think that was something that you ever would have thought the NHL would do in the past. But, you know, at the same time, they were like dragging up anti-Matthews stuff today. Did you see that with
I did not.
They dragged up comments from 2017 about kneeling during anthems and posting, like you said, it recently. So I think that so much of hockey is ghoulish with some of these clowns that used to be in there. And I think anything progressive that they do is an unheralded step forward. So,
yeah, all that stuff I agree with too, man. I think that it's really important to acknowledge that everyone is inherently biased. Everyone is inherently racist. I think that everybody needs to acknowledge that in order to move on. And I think that the NHL has an opportunity to do a lot of things. I think that they need to just stop dipping their toe in the water, right? If mm-hmm. you look at the other, if you look at the other sports leagues, I think that they've committed to that. I think that MLB's been there for a while. I think that especially with hockey being so dominated by whiteness, I think that it has to be something that is addressed even more so, instead of it being like, well, it's not really a problem in our league. No, it's the biggest problem in your league.
Right. It's not even like baseball where, you know, there's Latin and Asian and like, it's just like Canadian, white American.
Yeah. White Sweden. Indian. Yeah. Russian, German, the main unifying thing is the fact that they look like us, is most athletes are white, right? So the ability to grow that sport and to acknowledge that it needs to grow and to really commit to those efforts in all different areas, say what you will about the Chicago Blackhawks, but they commit to this stuff and they commit to racial equality. They commit to including women in their organization. They commit to making sure that they are being, that they're being inclusive and they're being respectful to the fact that their logo is an indigenous person, and they're trying to make sure that they do all that stuff. So it's legit, it's important, and they make it part of their organization. I think that most organizations are worried about alienating any of their fan base, and they're worried about any revenue dollars dropping.
Read white.
And yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Subtext. What does this say? Subscript, look down. Oh, white. They're worried about alienating any of their fans. And it's gotta be to the point where it's, if the bottom line doesn't add up, then the moral line has to add up. And I just don't feel like that's been done enough in hockey. I think that it needs to be done more. I mean, how frequently do NHL players have to deal with, if they're going to the penalty box, are they hearing racial statements? That happened in Chicago, I think, most recently for I forget which player it was, but one of the players is going to the box, and the Blackhawks found the guy who said it and said, you are no longer allowed in the United Center. So to speak to the Blackhawks and their organization, say that you hate the Blackhawks as much as I do, and I'll I'll tell you you're wrong, but they do it, man.
Yep. And, I certainly don't want to argue the point that what they're doing is sufficient. I think that, they certainly can improve and need to improve. And I think that if you look at it from kind of where we are in St. Louis, it's such a, especially around the arena, that area is so culturally diverse. It's not a white majority in those areas. And are they doing everything they can to reach out to those communities to get them to play a pair of hockey skates on,
exactly,
put a stick in their hands? And, if you're concerned about their well-being, you get them involved in sports and activities that are away from harmful things in their lives. And, it can happen with anybody, and regardless of your skin color or religion. So it's just making that happen, and they certainly can do better on that front, that's for sure.
They can sell the merchandise, right? They can say hockey is for everybody. They can sell the pride tape. They can sell the pride logos. They can sell the hockey stands for equality. Hockey fights cancer. Hockey fights for equality. Like, you're saying equality, but what you're not saying is there's no place for racism. There's no place for that in our game. Like, it's always that fringe thing. Like, hockey is for everybody. And what I mean by that is that if you pray different, if you look different, if you love different, if you identify different, if there's any of these differences, that hockey is for you. And if they could just come out and say that and have these other initiatives as well, I would respect the game a whole lot more.
Yep. I think, you know, the kind of, as always, the execution is the problem. There's certainly no issue with messaging with the NHL. It's just kind of communicating, right? We got a lower body injury. It's kind of the same vagueness of, you know, we got a
hockey is for everybody.
So, you know, certainly being more direct and honest with the problem, and you know, I think every league, every organization has a responsibility to do that. And certainly the Blues and the NHL aren't alone. And, but it would be nice to see from an organization that you love and care for so much.
It would be super groovy, and it would be just make me buy more merchandise. Should that be physically possible?
Yep. Now, kind of looking forward to the Blues. They had some pretty big news about just kind of the situation with all the Blues injuries going forward, and lots of new players in the lineup recently. My dad called me and he's like, "Who's this Austin Pagansky guy?" And I was like, I don't know who Austin Pagansky is. He's from, you know, he's not a standout prospect. He's not a big player in their talent pool that you were hoping to come up. He's just kind of a guy filling space because they're just that hurt right now. And they've had a couple other guys in Nathan Walker and last night and Dakota Johnson step in. So, you know, and they're just super injured right now.
There is, that is an understatement for sure. And if you would have said that at the quarter mark of the season or 33, you know, a third of the way through, that on our top line is going to be Dakota Johnson or Nathan Walker, I'd have said, sell, right? Like get out. But they're, you know, we're still on the bubble. But yeah, man, it's, the taxi squad has been utilized to its fullest extent, and I really hope that it doesn't have to be used any further.
Yeah, I think you could have convinced me that any of them were starring in the new Netflix series. Or I'm like, no, those aren't St. Louis Blues players. They're going to be in Ashoka. Yeah, big fan.
They're going to be in the next Adam Sandler Netflix film. Yeah. Austin Pogonaski is a stapler. Another South Park reference. Three of them.
Yeah. But looked like JR talked with Armstrong today and put out some news, you know, that we kind of been hearing over the past couple of games, that Tarasenko's coming back and pretty soon. You know, he said that he's the closest to coming back by a country mile. So that's certainly some good news headed our way.
Yeah. To get him back. And I know that at the beginning of the year, I was not optimistic, and I'm still not super optimistic about his return and what we're going to be getting back as far as the caliber of player that we had, you know, a couple years ago. Well, a couple shoulder surgeries ago.
Yeah.
But I'm really excited to get him back in the lineup, especially, you know, no offense to Dakota Johnson or Pogonaski or Nathan Walker, but I think the rest of the season that they may be better suited for that Netflix special as opposed to our hopes for the playoffs. So.
Yep. But he was a little more doom and gloom with the rest of the roster. You know, De La Rose is going to be reevaluated in 3 weeks. Thomas is 4 weeks. Barbashev 6 weeks. Gunnarsson's out for the season. And then just Parayko, Schwartz, and Bozak are out indefinitely.
I did hear about the Parayko, Schwartz, and Bozak being out indefinitely. I had read where he said that out indefinitely isn't as isn't as bad as it might seem, though, right? Like, I don't think that he said that it wasn't kind of a Chicken Little scenario, but definitely that, you know, out indefinitely, definitely doesn't give us any time frame, but hopefully, you know, Schwartz could come back. I know Bozak skated for a day or two, and then you didn't see him anymore, so I don't hold out much hope there. But maybe Schwartz, since his injury came out of nowhere, and I'm not sure about Parayko, since he was basically only playing games and taking maintenance days during all the practices. So I don't hold out much hope there, though, either.
Yep. So, you know, Bozak is the only one skating right now. They said he did make the road trip with the team.
Okay.
So he went west. They still don't think he's going to play on the road trip, but he's active with the team.
There you go.
But the other two aren't skating. They confirmed that Schwartz's injury is an oblique. And then Parayko, they talked about his back. If you read the article, there was some, like, won't confirm that playing in the early season contributed to making his back injury worse, but you know, it seemed like
that's like a vote. That's like Tortorella's vote of confidence. Like, right. I'm not gonna say it didn't. Like, okay, like, did someone just rip a fart in this elevator? I'm not gonna say I didn't rip a fart in the elevator. Like, okay, clearly, dude, you just tore ass. So I'm not licking toads.
Right. Save me, Jesus.
I think we need to make you oblique Moonwalker instead of Huber's Moonwalker. Yeah, man, I'm pretty worried about all these injuries. I did see a quote from Armstrong saying that what could potentially happen is that all of our players come back at just the right time to kind of spring us into the postseason, and you know, and they show up pretty well rested and all that stuff. But that is a shit ton of maybes and a lot of hope that you're putting your hat on there.
I agree. I do wonder a bit about how much of this is finagling your LTIR cap. So, you know, Parayko is 3 or 4 games away and, you know, 6 days for qualifying for long-term injury. And then Schwartz is the same, you know, so 4 or 5 games and 10 days to qualify. So I don't know if it's your originally intended avenue, but it certainly seems like it could be a way to make sure that they clear all the, you know, finances to get Tarasenko back and not have to make any moves in such a weird season where who knows who's wanting a deal. And it seems like most of the division races, while there are a couple front runners, they're all pretty tight. So tight. Many teams are
pretty tight,
playoff race adjacent enough to not want to make a deal. So, you know, that could be a potential thing.
I'm down with that. I really am. If they don't have to make those moves, and if they don't have to worry about dealing somebody in the season. And I agree, man, those playoff adjacent teams, right? Because you look at the standings and they're very deceptive in that, you know, one team's played 24 games and the other team that's right behind them has 6 less points, but they've played 5 less games.
Yep.
So really, you know, are you a pretender? Are you a contender? Are you just straight out of it? There are very few teams that are straight out of it. And even some of the teams that last week you just thought are straight out of it, like Ottawa, Ottawa's surging right now. I don't think they're going to do anything in that division, but they're surging with their plays and they're getting some wins. But you definitely have some basement teams, but you're thinking that list is,
we're in Calgary too. All right.
Yeah. Everybody gets to beat up on the nerds. I hope that, I could see Gunnarsson, and not Gunnarsson, I apologize. I could see Armstrong getting creative in that way and saying, you know, if we can just squeeze a couple more games out of Walker and Poganowski and Johnson, then let's do it. If we can squeeze a little bit more out of Johnson, then let's go for it. If we don't have to mess with our other players on our roster. That's what I've always said that. You've heard me say that at least.
I think you had on a t-shirt.
At least one time in the 30 something years.
Squeezing it out of Johnson.
And if I haven't, I'm gonna.
Yeah. So the games this week, they had three games that we saw. So Wednesday against the Kings and then Saturday and Monday against Anaheim. The first game on Wednesday against the Kings was a 2-1 loss. They played an all right game, seemed kind of uninspiring. It was really that game where it kind of stood out to me how beat up they were. And they lost De La Rose in that game, I think. So,
yep.
Just, you know, kind of tough. I want to say it was the 13th game or something they said where they started without the full roster or ended the game without the roster that they started with at the start of the game. So, you know, losing players mid game, having to scramble lines. But you know, just most of all, they didn't capitalize on their chances and they really didn't create many in that game.
Yeah, I was actually in attendance at that game, which was kind of neat and kind of fun.
Fault.
It was, hey man, the first 10 minutes of that game, they looked really, really strong. And then the last like 4 minutes of the game, they looked really, really strong. Everything else in between was basically a snooze fest and it was great company with friend of the podcast, Jarrett. And I appreciate the seat there, buddy. And it was just hard to watch that hockey, man. The Blues just couldn't score. They couldn't put it together, and even play in the neutral zone and in the defensive zone just didn't seem like they could sustain any pressure. Power play, 5-on-5, anything. They couldn't sustain pressure. They couldn't keep it out of their zone for any period of time. It seemed like we were just constantly in transition. And trying to get the puck in their zone. So kind of a bummer game. Not a whole lot of fun to watch, but hell, I was still at Enterprise. So even a bad day at Enterprise is a great day.
Yep. And, you know, that they really kind of caught the Kings on a hot point, too. I think they won six in a row, or that was their sixth game in a row that they won. So they seem to be putting things together for right now and are getting some good play out of their youngsters, especially that Velarde is really having a strong season so far, playing well on their top line. And just the old guys are getting stuff done for them enough to let the young guys get their opportunities. So it seems like they're putting stuff together in LA. I think they'll still have a hard time making that fourth team, but I think this is a little more than I expected out of them this year.
Completely agree. And with LA was confident enough about playing us after what they saw in the first game, whenever we played them, that they put in their backup goalie even, and the Blues still couldn't solve him until the last, 3 minutes or something of the game, less than 3 minutes, I think, even of the game. So,
yeah, another goalie pull situation goal. So,
Yep. And keep kind of putting themselves in that. But the other two games that we'll talk about, they definitely did not have trouble scoring in those games.
Yeah. So I was, you know, a little despondent. You see the roster, they're putting, what's the guy's name? Nathan Walker in. You know, I have to look back because I don't know these players. So you're not confident. They struggled to score in the past few games and you get a 7-6 victory, right? That's just how you write it up. Not a whole lot of pretty. It was kind of, you gave up some bad goals. We had a little goalie meltdown. We had, so it was just a barn burner, kind of certainly not a blue style hockey that you'd be used to see.
Yeah, but like we were talking about before we started recording, though, too, man, this is whenever Chief came in and he said, you know what, we are gonna just implode these lines. The lines are completely done. I was a huge fan of trying to stick with Perron and O'Reilly because that has worked for 2 years, and it's obvious that basically every other line combination was up for grabs except for Perron and O'Reilly. Any other center and winger combination they were willing to try. And then finally, Berube just said, you know what, this one's got to be on the table too. And they started out with that line of Sanford, O'Reilly, and Kyrou, and that line has clicked. They are humming. And Sanford has had two great games in a row, and I would love nothing more than to recant my Sanford haterade invitation. He's out there, man. He's looking good. He's getting shorthanded assists. He's getting power play goals, deflections that are at the midpoint, not just right in front of the net. He's playing in the areas where I always hope that that version one of Sanford, Zach Sanford with Berglund would play. He's playing that style of hockey. He's doing those types of things. He's scoring meaningful goals. So that reset button on those lines has sparked some legitimate scoring. And this was the first time that they started looking at defensive shakeups too, right? It was Scandella and Falk, Krug and Mikola, and Dunn and Bortuzzo. They rectified that Dunn and Bortuzzo thing the following game, but we can stick down here for that meltdown from Benner, man. What'd you think? His teammates said they loved it. So
I think it's, you know, it's whatever it is. It's a bad thing. It's a good thing. You just don't see that much out of a goaltender for sure. I think you think anytime a guy takes a penalty, he'll slam a stick on the boards, or you'll see him jaw at the referee, or, you know, they'll poke somebody in front of the net, you know, and you just don't see it out of a goalie. And this isn't the first time we've seen it out of him, but it certainly is something different. I don't know that it's a bad thing.
No, man, I love it. That's 1990s goalie behavior, right? Like, that's Patrick Waugh, Belfour, Brodeur hitting Sean Avery in the pills whenever he's waving the stick in his face, right? It's called Gee. But I absolutely loved it. And if you saw on the replay, I looked at it, and that smirk from Carlson whenever Kane put that goal in, that little just mustache smirk on the boards that he gave him, that's the type of smirk that would set off D'Souza in a heartbeat. And for our listeners, D'Souza is our go-to rec league goalie for a long time. He would pull that shit in a second. You know he would. He would shadow box him with that blocker.
At least the fake out punch.
At least that. So no, that's exactly the kind of smirk that does that. I love getting that fire. If that fire has to come from our goalie, that's kind of unfortunate. But at the same time, man, that is a callback to just my golden years of hockey with the likes of Waugh and Belfour and Brodeur playing and playing that kind of style. They hate to lose. I love to see that fire from anybody on my team, especially my goalie.
Yep. And they responded to it, you know, whether you could say it's because of that or not, but they came back, won the game. They put in as many goals as they needed to, and it was real back and forth hockey there. Just, you know, they would score and we would score 45 seconds later, and it really bounced back and forth in that second and third period there. It was exciting, and yeah, you thought maybe you get a goalie fight on top of it all there for a minute. It was exciting. So but certainly not the style that you're used to them playing.
No.
You're thinking when you get in those games, I think they usually lose them and come up a little short. So especially with all the struggles that they've had offensively, you know, player wise, it was certainly a good to get something like that. And they were able to parlay that Monday into five more goals and got a 5-4 win. So they started Husso, so he came in after Binnington had his pulled meltdown, and came in and gave up the early goal again. Still hasn't gotten quite past that, but he played somewhat solid. It seems like he gives up four goals every game, and you start to talk about having better than that in what your options are. But he's getting wins lately, and that's better than it has been.
And he's making really, really great saves.
Yeah.
You know, he's some of these goals that are going in, they are absolute. The majority of these goals that are going in, they really aren't his fault. You know, I'm looking at him and I'm not really seeing the backbreakers except for the early ones. But once that early one is in, if he can shake that, if he can get rid of that as his modus operandi, and can really just kind of get in there, make those first couple saves, get as comfortable as he is at the 15 minute mark is at the 15 minute mark, at the 20 minute mark of the first period, then I think that you've got a really good and serviceable backup goaltender who can make some pretty key saves. I think he's looked good. And again, I'm going to go back to Sanford, man. This was another really, really great game from him. The Blues had a shit third period. But the defensive pairings, I hope that they have settled in on Krug, Falk, Dunn, Scandella, Mikula, and Bertuzzo. I love those right now is what they have to be. I love those guys paired together. And these lines, man, that fourth line of Clifford, Joshua, and McEachran, I think that's a good one too. Clifford almost scored on Joshua's first goal, man. That one went off the knob of the stick. The lines look good for what we have at our disposal. I think that they're set up to get the most out of every single player that's out there playing.
Now, how do you think the lines will scramble when Tarasenko comes back?
So I could see easily Walker not being on the second line, right? I think that Sanford, O'Reilly, and Kyrou deserves more looks. I think that those three are playing really, really well. I think that Kyrou and Sanford are seeing the game through O'Reilly. I think Kyrou has been that huge surprise. And if Sanford is going to play that style of hockey on that line, you have to continue to see that play out. And if you can get Tarasenko, Shen, Perron, I think that it looks like a pretty lethal combination also, because I think that Shen has been our most consistent player literally all year. Consistent effort, consistent puck battles, consistent everything. So I'd love to see him on that line, and maybe everything else just stay the same.
Yep. And so I agree with all that, and I think that, you know, kind of Hoffman's left it a bit as the odd man out here, and you know, what do you think his prospects are for the rest of the year with the Blues? After this season, it's pretty tough. I guess you lose a bunch of centers and you're not playing with as much talent as a winger, so that's a tough break. But you know, he seems to have kind of integrated well with the Blues system so far. He's getting some goals and points, but is, you know, certainly not playing with the line caliber that we were hoping to provide him with either. So
agreed, and been given any amount of consistency. New team, no training camp, you know, line mates shuffling all the time. And this is not a hit on Sundqvist and Blais. Like, those guys are both NHL players who've got, you know, I bet Sonny's got around 100 games under his belt, and I bet Blais getting close to that, if not way more, right? Well, no, they'd have to with the caliber of
Sundqvist, maybe not Blais.
Sundqvist, maybe not Blais, but Sundqvist for sure. But yeah, these guys are NHL players, right? And to get Hoffman out there and playing with them, I don't think it's a terrible thing. But yeah, I think Hoffman would come in from a line whenever he's playing with guys in Florida, the caliber of like Barkov, and then to put him on Sundqvist, you have to admit that those are two completely and totally different types of centers. And maybe he's just going to be that power play specialist during the regular season until we kind of get everybody back and put him on the dot and just let him fire it on net. I think that's kind of what his role is going to be. And anything that he does 5-on-5 is going to have to be seen as bonus.
Yeah, I think, you know, coming in, he and Krug were supposed to be big power play specialists, and it really hasn't panned out so far. And it'll be interesting to see how that gets juggled with kind of three guys now that have kind of the same setup with Perron and Hoffman and Tarasenko.
Tarasenko, so, yeah.
Where they set up at the dot and kind of fire some shots. So, but on a power play that doesn't seem to get the shots that they need, although last game it seemed like they got quite a few opportunities and were playing pretty well. So hopefully that's a sign of things to come. But I feel like we say that every podcast and we don't get any power play goals. So
I agree. I think that we might even see Tarasenko. I know that he's usually a guy who's on the dots, but I know that the Blues are also running four forwards on a power play and usually one defender. I don't know if Tarasenko's shot is going to be better suited for the point or where he's working from the high boards or the high point, right, instead of the low point. I know that that's where he's kind of set up shop historically, but I wonder if they'll try him there, considering that they've already kind of got these other guys going and see if he can maybe put it on net from up top.
Yep. So any thoughts for the weeks moving forward? You know, we're going to hit the Kings up again here. And who else do we have on the schedule coming up?
Yeah, so next week it looks like we've got the Ducks one more time tomorrow. Again, we're recording on March 2nd. And then Friday, Saturday against the Kings, and then another 8 p.m. against the Sharks. So we'll probably record again maybe next Tuesday again. Wait for that Sharks game to finish up. We might record Monday night or Tuesday again and see what's going on. But yeah, we've got we'll have four to break down, at least three, maybe four to break down, and hopefully the Blues keep beating up on the Ducks, and you know, we've got an answer for Pearson and Quick.
Yeah, let's hope so. Stop letting Doughty score all those power play points.
I'm excited to see what happens with, you know, that Bennington's going to be in net against the Sharks. And I cannot wait to see the first person who gets in front of his net, how he reacts to that, because it's going to happen early. And I think that there's going to be some bad blood in that for sure. I think the Blues are going to stand up for him. I think that the Sharks are going to come at him pretty hard. And I think the Blues are going to stand up for him. I think that that could be a pivotal game for the Blues this season, depending upon how that all plays out.
Yep. So now I still haven't regained all my senses, but I have this overwhelming sensation of...
Ew, what's that smell?
It's this week's installment of Hot Garbage.
My hot garbage, Mike, is the experience that I had at Enterprise Center for the Blues game, right? And I didn't expect, like, I'm not trying to kick somebody while they're down, right? Like, it's like, come on, man.
We're hot dog cannon. They didn't invite me on the ice for music chairs.
Right? Yeah. I did get a chance to hang out with the Bear. I did get a photo again with Jarrett, who's a friend of the podcast, a buddy of mine. He and I worked with a friend of Louie's, I'll say, Alex, and we reenacted a Blue Crew moment from whenever I was a member of that team, in a photo that I'm glad to share with you before too long. I got to ask him to get it, but anyway, no, man, just the overall experience, it was cool in that everything was open, but it had this feel of like a preseason game that was just like an AHL or a St. Louis Vipers roller hockey league, or more accurately a Rusty Tin league out of Queenie Park kind of game, that kind of attendance. They did the best that they could, and I understand that. But you know, even the parking garage on the way in, on the way out, the way in was quick, but on the way out, like, it was a hot mess. We sat in the car for probably 25 minutes after the game, just trying to get out of the parking garage, which was kind of a bummer. The merch was solid. I got a pretty sweet hoodie that's on its way. I decided not to get it while I was there, but then I contacted STL Authentics to see if they would invoice me, and they were all too glad to invoice me for the it's a solid hoodie. I'll show it to you next time. Just overall, the experience, it obviously was different. They didn't even have a national anthem singer coming out, which was, I think that's an easy thing that you could absolutely easily make happen. They announced Charles Glenn for the national anthem, and I just in that moment are like, oh shit, man, they're pulling out all the stops. And then it was a recording of Charles Glenn singing the national anthem, which, you know, again, whatever, but it was just a bummer to kind of go there and experience it. It's something that I will always remember, and that I'm very grateful for being able to go to the game, because I know that very few people get the opportunity to do that. Just not really the vibe and the experience I was going for. And I tried to get some Let's Go Blues cheers going, and people were kind of looking at me like, man, you're way too loud for there being 1,400 people in here.
That's, and I was thinking, when you do that all the time though.
Yeah. Like, that's aggressive. Yeah, it was aggressive. But they were looking at me like I was too into the game, and I was looking right back at them like, how are you not into this game? Right. I'm sure this is probably many of yours first hockey experience in over 365 days. Let's put some oomph on it. Let's celebrate that. Let's make this a game. But pretty low key and not what I hoped for it to be. But once we all get vaccinated and get back in that house, you and I will chirp everybody, and we'll be loud as anything. So I'm looking forward to that more than anything.
Yeah. Now, how was the ice noise like?
Yeah, you could hear everything.
Yeah.
Right. Which was good. And I'm sure that the Blues heard me whenever I was screaming, "Let's go Blues," you know, and whenever I, nobody was screaming shoot, which was good. Shoot. Like, okay.
They don't sit high enough up right now.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. To let them know. You can
only do that from the 300s.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, you could hear most of everything, and you could really kind of feel the hits almost, which was kind of cool. So the overall experience, if the game interaction was strong, mm-hmm. but the overall experience of just being there cheering with 1900 of your closest family and friends, or 19,000 of your closest family and friends who root for the logo on your chest and bleed blue too, that was definitely missing and kind of a bummer. But again, I was glad that I was able to go. Louis was confined to his specific area. So the bear didn't even get a chance to get around. He was on his climb. Yeah. Like if you're training a dog, yeah. But it was, it was what it was. It was a good time. I missed the, 19,000 other people.
Yep. Well, yeah. So I got that. My hot garbage this week is the wiring in my house. So, like I mentioned early, I had some cable and internet issues, and kind of went downstairs to investigate. And there was like the biggest rat's nest of wires you've ever seen, hanging from all the rafters. And I got a partially unexposed basement area and a partially finished other area, and just there's coax and Ethernet and telephone cords just going every which way, but none of them terminated into like an outlet or anything. They were just like both sides hanging through the rafters. So I tore out, I had a 55 gallon trash can, tore out all of these wires and totally filled up a trash bag of wires that went nowhere for no purpose. So I did all this taking out of these wires, and I still hadn't fixed the problem. I was so mad, on top of, like having COVID and not being able to get anybody to come to the house to this issue with the internet. So I was not having it. And, sadly I was not smelling the hot garbage, but experiencing it in full vividity.
You're braver than I am, man. If I see a wire and I don't know what it does, I leave that shit right where that is.
It's when you see the, that's the male end and that's the female end, and they're just hanging on the same, you know, ductwork, not connected to anything. You're like, well, I'm pretty sure I could remove that. Sure.
This one could come off. We haven't had satellite service at our house for cable or dish or whatever for at least a year and a half. And I think we have two or three satellite dishes still attached to the exterior of our house somewhere. Like I'm just not sure on how to take that down or how to plug those holes.
The contract, they got to get that shit themselves, I think, right?
I would really like for that to happen. But yeah, I'm going to have to look into that because it's beginning to look like I've got SpaceX in my goddamn, in my backyard or on my siding.
Have to wear your tinfoil hat upstairs so they don't get the signals.
Elon Musk or Eric, I don't know.
Your neighborhood's nice, but I don't think Elon Musk would live there
yet. we'll get there. Yeah, we'll see if he'll bring some of his self-driving cars here and
game stonks.
Yeah. If he can get me to work, my 25-minute commute without with me sleeping that whole time. Shit, yes. If you can make that happen, man, you can live in my house, Elon Musk. You and your flamethrowers can be around my 2-year-old and 5-year-old. I do not give two shits.
I think Jean-Paul, he reserved the truck.
Oh, I can't wait to see that.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
He's on
the box truck. Yeah. There you go, man. I look forward to seeing that. That'd be pretty rad. We're once Savannah gets out of school, she starts kindergarten next year. We're looking at parlaying her tuition into a new ride for me. So we'll see if we get the Tesla or where we go from there. So
yeah,
yep.
Get a new whip.
All right. Maybe, man.
Well, thanks to all of our listeners for joining us this week. It's always fun hearing from people that listen to the podcast. So please reach out to us through our social medias. Also, as always, special thanks go out to producer Greg and Jeremy Boyer for the music. And then other shout outs for Nicole, Janae Aiko, and then Get Better Tiger Woods.
Yeah, man. Shout out to shit. I just put pen on the fucking ottoman. All right.
Pen 15 or no?
No, I just put fucking super like legit pen ink on the ottoman. Fuck. Shout out to I gotta make sure that side is facing towards the chair. So, and then if that comes up, you know I'm blaming that on a 5 or a 2-year-old. No, okay, back to this. Shout out to my friend out there in France, my friend Clitchy. And all my friends out there at that Westlake, representing that Westlake Stevens life. And then Eiffel 65, Destiny Child, and OMC. How bizarre, baby.
How bizarre indeed. Now, if you like the podcast, please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts and tell a friend. We're always looking to grow and meet new people to talk blues hockey with. So check us out on our socials, Optional Skate Blues on Facebook, and at Blues Skate on Twitter. And then, as always, let's go Blues.
Let's go Blues.